And Helios leaped upward, abandoned his gorgeous breakwater toward the coppery sky, so he might shine on the deathless ones, and also the death-bound yokels upon the grain-bearing ploughland. But our men aimed for Pylos, Neleus' well-settled city. They were just arriving. The men there were at sacrificing by the shore of the sea, bulls all black all over for the ground-shaker Sion Lox. 9 in number were the seatings, 500 men in each, sat down and on their behalf each put forward 9 bulls. As those men sampled the organ meats while they barbecued the thighs for the god, our men put straight into shore, and the sail of the balanced ship they raised and furled, moored her fast, and got themselves out. Out got Telemachus, right enough, stepping from the ship, but Athena led the way. She spoke first and addressed him, the goddess, Owl-Eyes Athena. "Telemachus, there's no use your being shy any longer, not a bit of it. What's the reason you even sailed over the deep? So you could find out about your father, wherever the earth hides him, and whatever end he met with. But come on now, go straight up to Nestor, breaker of horses. We should come to know whatever scheme he's got hidden in his chest. Keep begging him yourself that he not speak beside the point. He won't tell a lie, for he's a very honest type." Her, in turn, honest Telemachus faced and said, "Mentor, how am I supposed to go? How am I supposed to greet him? I have never yet tried my hand at speeches, the serious, sophisticated kind. And you know what? It is embarrassing, a youngster interrogating an elderly warrior." The goddess spoke to him in reply, Owl-Eyes Athena. "Telemachus, some things you yourself will figure out in your mind's vessel, but the rest also divinity will suggest. For I shouldn't have thought it was without the complicity of the gods that you were bred up and fed." That's how she spoke and took the lead, Pallas Athena, with a rapid gait, and he walked after in the footsteps of the god. And they arrived in the assembly of the Pelian warriors and their seating groups. And there was Nestor sat with his sons, and around them comrades, seeing to the feast, were roasting the flesh and putting the rest on skewers. And as soon as they got sight of the strangers, they all came up in a crowd and were welcoming them in their arms and bade them take a seat. First Nestor's son Pisistratus came right up next them, took the both of them by the hand and sat them by the meal on soft fleeces atop the salty seashore sands by his brother Thasimedes and their father both. Then he gave them portions of the organ meats and was pouring wine into a golden cup, and with a toast and a pledge she had dressed herself, Pallas Athena, the daughter of Zeus Aegis Holder. "Pray you now, guest friend, to Poseidon the Lord, for it is his feast that you have come here and met with in person. However, when you pour the libation and you pray, which is the tradition, give next then to this chap the cup of honey-sweet wine to pour, since he also, I should expect, is one to pray to the deathless ones. All us humans have great need of the gods. But he's a younger fellow, an age-mate to my own self. That's why I shall give first to you the golden chalice." Thus he spoke and was putting in her hand the cup of pleasing wine. But Athena quite enjoyed this honest, upstanding man because he gave her the golden chalice first. Immediately she made a number of prayers to Poseidon the Lord. "Hark, Poseidon, earth mover, don't you begrudge us, we who are praying thee, the completing of these actions. For Nestor first and foremost, and to his sons, send glory. But second, for the rest of them, give generously in exchange all the Pylians together for a magnificent hecatomb. And a bonus, grant that Telemachus and me return having accomplished the thing for which we came here, with our ship swift and black. Thus then did she pray, and was herself fulfilling all of it. She gave Telemachus the pretty cup with two handles, and he set to praying just the same way, Odysseus' own son. Then when the men had spit-roasted the outer flesh and drawn it off, they divided the portions and feasted a most glorious feast. But once they exorcised the craving for drink and for food, he then began their conversation, the Geranian horseman Nestor. "Now indeed is a better time to question and investigate the strangers, whoever they are, after they've enjoyed the meal. Well, stranger, who are ye? From where do ye cross the watery ways? Is it on some sort of job, or do you wander randomly, like your pirates also, over salt sea, the fellows who roam, staking their lives, winning ugly over foreigners?" Him, in turn, honest Telemachus faced and said, once he'd got his courage up, for she herself put the courage in his mind's vessel, Athena, so that he might ask after his departed father, and so he would get himself a good reputation among people. "Nestor, son of Neleus, great glory of the Achaeans, you're asking where we're from, and I shall recount the tale myself. We, whom you see, have arrived from Ithaca under Neion. This is a private job, not a political one, which I'm publicizing. I'm after the broad report on my famous father, in case I hear it somewhere, about the radiant Odysseus, mind to endure, whom, they say, once upon a time, fought by your side, and left the city of the Trojans utterly sacked. For all the rest of them, as many as did battle with the Trojans, we know the score, where each man dropped in bitter destruction. But for him, Cronus' son has made even his demise unsearchable. For there's no one able to say clearly where he died, whether he was broken on the dry land under enemy warriors, or even on the high seas amid the swells of Amphitrite. That's why I've come now to these your knees, in case you'd like to recount the man's grievous obliteration. Perhaps you happened to see it with your own eyes, or you heard the story from some other wanderer off his course. For more than anyone, his mother bore him for misery. Don't be embarrassed at all for me, no, and soften things. Don't you take pity, but catalogue it exactly for me, how you met with it face to face. I beg you, if ever my father did a thing for you, the good Odysseus, whether in speech or in some action, he made a promise and came through in that country of the Trojans, where you suffered woes, ye Achaeans. Remember these things on my account, and tell me straight and no mistake." And then he took his turn, the Geranian, horseman Nestor. "Ah, friend, since you've put me in mind of the misery in that country we endured, we berserkers, sons of Achaeans, whether with our ships on the misty-looking deep, marauding after booty where Achilles' fancy led, or what we did around the great town of Priam the Lord, in combat, there and then were they slaughtered, the most and the best. Ajax lies there, a war god, and there's Achilles, and there's Patroclus, an adviser worth his weight in God's money. And there lies my own dear son, strong and at the same time without reproach, Antilochus, superior at sprinting away, and a fighter. So much else on top of these, the evils that we suffered, who could tell them, who reveal the whole of it, that are human doomed to die? Not if you hang around 5 years, right enough, or even 6, could you ask after so much evil as they suffered over there, the radiant Achaeans? Long since, bored and tired, you'd have reached your father's earth. For it was 9 years we kept busy stitching them up in evil with all manner of cunning deceits, and the son of Cronos scarcely finished it. Those days no one ever liked to match himself in wits face to face, since he used to win by a distance, radiant Odysseus, in all manner of cunning deceits, your own father. If it's true, anyway, that you're that man's offspring. Pardon my trembling as I look into it, for you know, the way of talking at least is very like, but you wouldn't have thought that a younger man could make a point so, just like him. There, mind you, the whole while, myself and the radiant Odysseus, never once did we talk at odds in the assembly, neither in senior council, but two breathing as one in our plan and pointed counsel did we expound to the Argives how to get an outcome far the best. Once we sacked the steep city of Priam, however, and we boarded ships, God did scatter the Achaeans. And that was when Zeus began plotting in his mind's vessel a grievous return home for the Argives, since no way prudent nor righteous were we, not all of us. So a number of them met with an evil fate out of the deadly wrath of Aulis, she of the weighty sire. That was her set strife among the Atridae, both together, for the pair of them called into assembly all the Achaeans, off the cuff, not at all by the book, at the setting of the sun. They came drunk on their wine, the sons of the Achaeans, and the two of them made their revelation, the reason why they gathered the host. Then, you see, Menelaus bids all the Achaeans remember their return home on the broad back of the sea. But this was not the pleasure of Agamemnon altogether, for he wanted to hold back the host for sacrificing sacred hecatombs, that he might mollify that dreadful anger of Athena. The fool! He did not grasp the point that she was not to be persuaded, for it is not hastily that the intent of the gods, who exist forever, is turned aside. So the pair of them, trading turns with hostile lions, took their stand. But the rest of them leapt up, the fair Greaves, Achaeans, in a fateful uproar, and a split council also split their pleasure. We passed the night stirring violent thoughts in our minds' vessels, one side against the other, for Zeus was fitting us up an objective evil. Dawn comes, and some of us drag our ships into the shining sea, and we loaded in our acquisitions, along with the women in their plunging girdles. So then half the host were held back remaining, there by Atrides Agamemnon, shepherd of the hosts. But half of us boarded, and we pushed off. And right swiftly were our ships sailing, and the god spread smooth the sheet of the great yawning deep. We came into Tenedos and made holy sacrifices to the gods, hurrying our way homeward. But Zeus did not yet intend our return. The scoundrel! It was he roused the evil strife yet again, a second time. Some of them turned back their rolling ships and went, those men around Odysseus the lord, bright of mind, dazzling of wit, again taking sides with Atrides Agamemnon. My part, however, with all the gathered ships who followed me, was for fleeing, because I recognized just what evils the divinity was planning. And he ran away, Tydeus' son, a regular Ares, and he urged on his mates. Finally, late among us, came blond Menelaus, In Lesbos he caught up with us, pondering the long voyage, whether we would return from above Chios, the craggy, toward the island Psyria, keeping the isle to port, or from beneath Chios, passing by windy Mimas. We were begging the god to tell us a sign, and you know, he showed us, and bade us cut through the middle of the open sea to Euboea, that we might the quickest escape out harm's way. And he roused on us a shrill wind to blow, and the ships speedily made their crossing down the fishy ways, and in Geraistus put to shore by night. And for Poseidon, from bulls we piled on the many thighs, once we'd measured the great open sea. It was the fourth day when in Argos the balanced ships by the comrades of Tydeus' son, Diomedes' horse tamer, were made to stand. But I, of course, kept on to Pylos, nor was it once extinguished, the wind, since first, in fact, the god set it on to blow. So I came, my child, heedless and unheeded, nor did I know a thing about the others, who of the Achaeans were saved and who lost. But as much as I hear about just sitting in my rooms, nothing wrong with that. You learn it. I'll not conceal from you. Happily, they say, did the Myrmidons go, the spear-shakers, whom he led, Achilles, the big spirit's brilliant son. Happily, another way, Philoctetes, Poeas' splendid son. But all his companions Idomeneus led into Crete, the ones who escaped from the war and the sea robbed him not a one. But Atrides, why, even you're hearing it, for all you live afar, how he came, how Aegisthus planned him a wretched destruction. Mind you, that was a man paid the price pretty miserably. So good a thing it is that even a child be left behind of a perished warrior, since he was even the one paid back the father killer, Aegisthus the deceiver, who murdered his celebrated father. You as well, dear, for I see jolly well that you're a handsome man and tall. Be brave, do you, so that the younger generation will also speak you well. Him then honest Telemachus faced and said, O Nestor, Neleus' son, great glory of the Achaeans, and how did that man get his revenge? And for him these Achaeans will support a reputation broadcast even for future people to hear of it. If only the gods would invest me in so great a power to pay back the suitors for their grievous crossing the line, these men who bugger me and plot outrageous things. But no, the gods spun me no such prosperity, not for my father nor me, for now we must endure it all the same. And he took his place then, the Geranian horseman Nestor. Friend, since you brought this up and you're talking, they do say there's suitors after your mother, lots of them, in your house against your will, making nasty plans. Tell me, are you willingly oppressed, or is it that the people hate you through the country, following the voice of a god? Who knows if someday he'll come and pay them back by force, whether he himself, a single man, or with all the Achaeans together? If only she would want to befriend you, Aulais Athena, as those days she so cared for Odysseus the Glorious, in the country of the Trojans, where we Achaeans suffered griefs. For I never yet saw the gods so take sides out in the open, as there by that man out in the open stood Pallas Athena. If only she'd want to befriend you thus, care for you so in her life's breath. Then he'd forget all about his wedding night, one of that lot. Him, in turn, honest Telemachus faced and said, Old man, I don't think this line will be fulfilled just yet. That's a big deal you're talking about. Amazing. It's not in me to hope that could happen, not even if it's how the gods want it. In turn, she spoke to him, the goddess, Owl Eyes Athena. Telemachus, what's this line escape the fence of your teeth? It's easy, if a god wants it, mind, even from far away, to rescue a man. I would prefer it, even me, when I'd suffered many griefs, to arrive back home and see the day of salvific return, instead of come and get killed at the hearth the way Agamemnon was destroyed by Aegisthus in a scheme with his own wife. But, well, the thing is, death, the equalizer, not even the gods are able to ward it off, even for a man they like. Whenever it is, the baleful portion takes him down, of death that lays one out. Then honest Telemachus faced her and said, Mentor, let's no more recount these things, concerned about them as we are. For that man, there is no more a true return home, no. For him already the deathless ones have denoted death, appointed her black shade. But now I'd like a different epic, to inquire and ask after Nestor, since he better knows the decisions and the rationale of others. For 3 times, they say, he was made king of a generation of men. So he seems like an immortal to me, to look at him. O Nestor, son of Neleus, tell us the truth. How did Atreides die, broad-ruling Agamemnon? Where was Menelaus at? What destruction did he plot for him, Aegisthus the deceiver, since he killed much the better man? Or was the former not in Argos of Achaea, but somewhere else, wandering among mankind, while the other took courage and did murder? And then he took his place, the Gerenian, horseman Nestor. So I'll tell you myself, child, and I'll tell true things all. For that matter, you could imagine all by yourself how it would have gone, if he'd found him alive, Aegisthus, in the palace, when Atreides got back from Troy, the blonde Menelaus. Then, even upon the dead, would they not have piled a mound of earth? No, that fellow the dogs and ominous buzzards had devoured, lying in the plain far from the city, nor would a one of them have wept for him among the Achaean women, for he plotted a mighty big deed. For the rest of us were over there, completing our many trials, situated. But that guy, at his ease in a hidden nook of Argos horse fodder, plied his charms on Agamemnon's wife, repeating his love lines. But she, don't you know, to begin with anyway, refused the dirty deed, radiant Clytemnestra, for in her mind's vessel she used good ingredients. And there was also beside her, you see, a poetry man, whom he many times enjoined, Atreides, when he went for Troy to, quote, guard his wife. But whenever it was that the budget of the gods bound her to be conquered, that was the same time he brought that singer to a desert island, left him behind for the buzzards to become their find and prize, and the woman... He wants it, she wants it, he drew along to his place. Many were the thighs he roasted for the gods on holy altar stones, many the adornments he hung up, tapestries and gold, once he'd consummated the big deed, a thing he'd never hoped for in his life's breath. For we were together, you see, sailing once we'd pushed out of Troy, Atreides and myself, knowing loyal friendship for one another. But when we reached Holy Sunion, the Cape of Athens, that was where Menelaus' navigator was done in by Phoebus Apollo with his gentle bolts, attacked and shot down as he held in hand the steering oar of the running ship. Prudent Phrontis, son of beneficent Onetor, who excelled the tribes of mankind at the steering of a ship whenever the storm winds set to squall. And so the one of us was held back there, though he was eager for the journey, while he might bury his comrade and sort out his funeral. But just when he also got going on the drunken deep, in his hollowed ships, and got to Malaya's steep mountain, at speed, that was when the road turned bitter as Broadface Zeus hatched his plan. He poured on them the hot blast of shrill winds that kept feeding prodigious waves, measuring mountains. That was where he split the fleet. Some ships he brought toward Crete, where the Sidonians used to live, by the streams of Yardanus. There you have this one sheer and steep rock jut into the brine, at the furthest part of Gortys in the foggy deep, where the south wind thrusts the huge swell against the headland on the left, toward Phaistos, a tiny rock keeping out a huge swell. That's where those ships came, and they hardly escaped destruction. The men, mind. But the ships, they cracked them on the rocks, those waves. But the others, all of five ships, cyan-colored prows, were brought towards Egypt, the baggage of wind and water. So the man, for his part, was over there gathering a large living and gold as he wandered with his ships down with the foreigners. But meanwhile, Aegisthus devised a sorry business at home. For 7 years he lorded it over the great gold of Mycenae, once he'd killed Atrides and submitted the populace to himself. But in that 8th year came the evil, the radiant Orestes, back from Athens, and he slew the father murderer, Aegisthus the deceiver, the man who slew his famous father. And I tell you, when he killed the man, he catered the funeral for the Argives of his hated mother and the coward Aegisthus. And on the selfsame day, there came to him the trusty war-shout Menelaus, bringing his many acquisitions, as much weight as his ships could lift. You also, friend, do not long roam afar from home. You've abandoned your property, left grown men in your household, so outrageous. Watch out they don't devour the whole lot. Divide up the chattels, so you've come your way on a useless journey. No, to Menelaus, I urge it myself, even order it. Go there, for that's a man newly arrived from foreign parts. Among those people he wouldn't have hoped in his life's breath to get away from. Someone whom first the storm winds had thrown off course into a gulf of such a vastness where not even the omen birds return in a year itself. It's so huge and dreadful. But off with ye now, with your ship and your crew, or if you prefer, on foot. Here's your car and horses, and here's my own sons for you, who will be your escorts into radiant Lacedaemon, where there's blonde Menelaus. Entreat him yourself, that he tell you nothing wide of the mark, and he won't tell a lie, for he's a very honest fellow. So he spoke, and Helios the sun, in fact, went down. Twilight came on. Amongst them also spoke the goddess, Owl Eyes Athena. Old sir, when it comes to that, piece by piece you recounted the story. But come, cut your tongues, then mix the wine, so that for Poseidon and the rest of the deathless ones we can pour out our libations and bethink ourselves of bed. Look at the time, for already the light's going under the western dark, and it doesn't look right to be sat in overlong at the gods' feast, but to head back instead. Zeus's daughter spoke, and the men acknowledged her utterance. Their heralds first poured water on their hands, while the pages topped up the mixing bowls with drink, and they distributed goblets to everyone once they'd put the first pour in. They began tossing the tongues in the fire, standing up and pouring the libation. But once they poured off and drank up as much as the life's breath desired, Then did Athena and Telemachus the godlike begin fixing together to return to the hollow ship. Nestor in turn restrains them, fixing on them with his lines. Zeus, protect us and the rest of the deathless gods from this, that men such as you should go from me and mine to your quick ship as though from some altogether naked destitute, not to mention a loser, who hadn't any shirts and blankets plenty in the house, neither for himself to sleep softly in, nor for his guests. No, sir, I've got the shirts, and my blankets are beautiful. No fear that the son of the man himself, Odysseus, is going to lie down on a ship's deck while I myself still live, and then while there's sons left behind in the halls to front up guest friends, whoever it is turns up at my house. And in turn she spoke to him, the goddess, Aulis Athena. That's well said, my old sir, and it seems right by you that Telemachus obey, since it's much better thus. No, this is a man who'll follow you just now so that he can sleep in your rooms. But for my part, off to the black ship I go, or I might encourage the crew and tell them the details. For only I in that group can claim seniority. The rest are younger men who come along in friendship, all of them of an age like Big Spirit Telemachus. There I would lie me down by the hollow ship and black, for now. But at dawn, for the Cauconians, Big Spirits, I get going. What a debt is owed me, not some new one, mind, nor a trifle. But do you, for him, once he's got to your house, send him escort with a chariot and a son. Give him 2 horses, who are your quickest at the gallop, and top of the class for strength. Just as she said that, off she went, Aulis Athena, looking like a vulture in her form. Wonder took hold of everyone who looked on. He took hold of Telemachus' arm, spoke his line, and called it what it was. Ah, friend, I don't expect you'll turn out a loser and a coward. If young as you surely are, the gods follow you thus as escorts. For this one was no other among those who have Olympian houses than Zeus's daughter, the most glorious goddess, third-born, she who also honored your quality father among the Argives. Nay, my lady, be merciful. Grant me a quality reputation, myself and my sons, and the reverend wife shares my bed. For you in turn, I myself shall sacrifice a yearling heifer, broad of brow, a virgin, whom never yet was brought under the yoke by a man. Her shall I sacrifice for you, once I've personally poured the liquid gold on her horns. So he spoke in prayer, and she heard him, Pallas Athena. He led the men present, did the Geranian, horseman Nestor, sons and sons-in-law, to his beautiful house. But when they arrived at the very famous house of this lord, they sat in order on the couches and high chairs. And for the men who came, the old man mixed up a bowlful of sweet drinking wine, a little number which in its 11th year the housekeeper opened and, as it were, loosened its veil. From it the old man mixed the bowl, and repeatedly to Athena he prayed as he spilled the libation to the maiden girl of Zeus, Aegis Holder. But once they poured off and drank up as much as the life's breath desired, some of the men went off to go to bed, each to his own home. But him he put to bed right there, did the Geranian, horseman Nestor, Telemachus, the own son of gods Odysseus, in a corded bed-frame put under the resounding portico, and by him indeed the robust ash-spear Pisistratus, captain of men, the one who was still a lusty bachelor among the married sons in his rooms. Himself in turn he slept in a corner of the lofty house, and the wife to him, the queen, prepared the bed, and they slept together. But when Eos, the early-born child, appeared, Rose Fingers, the dawn, he roused himself from the love-bed, did the Geranian horseman Nestor, went outside and sat him straight down upon the smoothest stones, which used to be right in front of his tall doors, shining white, glistening with lacquer, upon which, of a time, Neleus used to take his seat, a judge worth his weight in God's money. But that's a man already downed by death's day, gone off to the invisible realm, while at that time Nestor sat in turn as the Geranian, the watcher of the Achaeans, holder of the scepter. Around him his sons were gathered together, come out of their chambers, Echephron and Stratius, and Perseus and Aretas, and the godlike Thrasymedes. After these, sixth came Pisistratus, the hero, and so alongside they brought Telemachus, like a god, and seated him. And he began the discloses to them, did the Geranian, horseman Nestor. Quick to me now, my children, fulfill my wish, so that very first among the gods I may propitiate Athena, who came clear as day to me at the rich feast of the god. But come, someone, to the flatland, after a cow, get on with it, so quick as possible she gets here, and he drives her out the herd, the chap who oversees the cattle. One of you, to Telemachus, big spirit, his ship of black, go and bring all his crew, but leave two alone behind. Another one, let him order the gilder, Laerces, to this spot, come to pour the gold on the heifer's horns. The rest of you stay here in a bunch, but tell them inside, the slave women through the house, to work up our glorious feast. Bring chairs, firewood on both sides, and also clean water. So he spoke, and all of them started getting busy. Came first the cow from the plain, then came from the quick ship and balanced the crew of Telemachus Greatheart. Next comes the coppersmith, holding in his arms his copper tools, the instruments of the art, the anvil and the hammer and well-made fire tongs with which he worked the gold. And there came Athena to meet the sacrifice in person. The old man, horse-driver Nestor, gave over the gold. The other then poured it on the heifer's horns. Once he'd prepped it for the goddess to enjoy the ornament when she saw it. A pair of them led in the cow by the horns, Stratius and radiant Echephron. Their holy water Aretas carried in a flowery basin when he came out the storeroom, in his other hand the barleycorn in a basket. The axe, steady in battle Thrasymedes, held sharp in his hand and stood by the cow to lop it. Perseus held on to the blood bowl. The old man, horse-driver Nestor, began with the water wash and the barley throwing, praying to Athena many a time as he started the ritual, tossing the hairs from the head into fire. But once they prayed and threw forward the barley groats, right away Nestor's son, his high heart Thrasymedes, stood near and lunged. The axe cut out the sinews of the neck and undid the strength of the heifer. And the women alleluia'd, the daughters and the in-laws and the revered bedwife herself of Nestor, Eurydice, the eldest of Clymenus' daughters. Then some of the men picked her up off the ground of wide journeys and held her, but it was Pisistratus, captain of men, that cut the throat. And when the black blood flooded out and the life's breath abandoned her bones, quickly then they divvied her up and straightway cut out the thighs, all by the recipe, covered them in a layer of fat once they'd folded them double, and laid the raw pieces on top. And he began cooking them over wood, the old man, and pouring on flame-red wine. The youngsters by him held the five-pronged forks in hand, but when the thighs had cooked down and they tasted the organ meats, they went on and cut up the rest and pierced it through on spits and fell to roasting the skewers as they held them in hand. Meanwhile, she bathed Telemachus, did lovely Polycaste, Nestor's youngest daughter, Neleus's granddaughter. But after she bathed him and anointed him with virgin olive oil, she threw around him a lovely cloak and a shirt, and he stepped out of the tub with a physique like the deathless ones. And by Nestor he went and sat himself down, the shepherd of the folk. And once they grilled the outside of the meat and drew it off, they began sitting down and dining. And quality men saw to things, pouring out the wine into golden goblets. But once they exorcised the passion for drink and for food, he began his discloses to them, did the Geranian, horseman Nestor. "My boys, come, for Telemachus, the gorgeous manes, the horses, bring them and yoke them to a car, that he may make his way." So he spoke, and they jolly well heard him, and obeyed. Rapidly they yoked under a chariot the swift horses, and the lady housekeeper packed in bread and wine, and finger foods, such as they eat, the kings fostered of Zeus. Up then Telemachus, he mounted the gorgeous car seat. By him, of course, was Nestor's son Pisistratus, captain of men. He climbed up into the seat and grabbed the reins in his hands, gave the whip to start them, and the brace flew off, not unwilling, into the plain, and left behind the steep city of Pylos. And all day long they shook the yoke they carried on both sides. Down went Helios the sun, and all the highways shadowed over, as they arrived in Pherae to Diocles' house, the son of Ortilochus, the man Alpheus begot as a son. There they spent the night, and he set for them his guest friend's board. Soon as Eos, the early-born child, appeared, rose fingers, the dawn, they got to yoking the horses and climbing on the intricate car. They drove out through the front gate and the resounding portico. He gave the whip to start, and the brace flew off, not unwilling. They arrived in the wheat-bearing plain, and from there and then began the home stretch, for such was the swift in swift horses' carriage. Down sank Helios the sun, and all the highways shadowed over.